Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, David Janes here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How you doing this morning?
Awesome. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us. OTAs are going down, as we know. You learn everything there is to learn about a football team at OTAs in May. There is a lot of conversation around DeAndre Hopkins right now with the Tennessee Titans. He's got one more year left on his deal. He'll be 32 next week on June the 6th. And throwing the question out there, should the Titans be proactive and sign him to a contract extension before the season? Obviously played really well last year, 75 catches, over 1,000 yards. Where do you come down on the Hopkins part of this? And if he did get a new deal at this stage of his career, what do you think that would look like from a financial perspective?
It's interesting because, you know, you obviously have the age, and typically when receivers get to this point in their career where you're talking about, you know, him starting the season at 32, it becomes an internal evaluation in terms of how long what he's got left. Where does he fit in the scheme? Is he still the one? Can he still play the X? Where does he fit moving forward? You have a new staff there. I think it's fair to say if he were to be extended, like a lot of these wide receivers that are going to hit free agency next year, there's a number of guys that are 30 plus that are names. But they're all, you know, year to year, really assessments. I think you could look at Hopkins the way, Stephon Diggs, right, with the Houston Texans. You know, you got Keenan Allen with the Chicago Bears. These are free agents next year. You know, Amari Cooper, these are all 30-plus-year-old, you know, players. Brandon Cooks with the Cowboys. Odell Beckham, depending on how you feel about him. There's a lot of guys that would be heading into free agency next year, 30-plus. You know, Hopkins would be 33 heading into 2025. It all comes down to, like, does the coaching staff look at him and say, okay, definitely 2 years of, prime level play from him. Okay, then that's 2 years of guaranteed money you would probably look at. Assessing the market value, that's the interesting thing, is I don't know that any of these players, you know, fit this idea of the new model for wide receivers. Hey, is he a $30 million wide receiver? Is he a $25 million wide receiver? That's all going to come down to ultimately how the team values. I can tell you right now, in terms of the value they place on him, if they're going to measure it against the rest of the league, he's just not going to be a $30 million wide receiver unless he absolutely balls out this year and shows that, hey, there's a fountain of youth here and he's got a couple of years of, what we consider like all pro DeAndre Hopkins is still there. He had a fine season last year. I was looking over the numbers after Joe and I were texting this morning, and one of the things I was shocked with, I think he had like 130 plus targets, 4 drops, pretty good. You know, I mean, he's the parts of his game that have been valued in the past, you can still see it there. He's very reliable, very detail oriented. These guys likes to compete. You know, I've seen some of the comments he's made about their wide receiver room, which is a pretty darn good room, and wanting to be the guy in that room. So you definitely have, you know, Calvin Ridley can learn from that. Treylon Burks can continue to learn from that. But pressing that value against what the rest of the league is going to value him at, it's going to be the same situation for an Amari Cooper. It's going to be the same situation for all these guys that are going to be, you know, Stephon Diggs. They're all going to be 30 plus to 31, 32 heading into 2025. And teams are going to say, look, there's a year of guaranteed money here. Maybe, you know, half of the salary in year two is guaranteed, probably in that range of, depending again how the team values them, you know, 20 to 25 million. Where do you find the sweet spot for this player? And, you know, if he doesn't have a great season in 2024, then you're starting to look at, okay, what are the secondary numbers at for wide receivers? Is he, you know, $15 to $20 million player? It's all going to come down to 2024. I don't know that you get ahead of it now. I really don't, just because I don't know that there's this huge free agency market for him this offseason. Like, for a one-year contract, sure. But, and I'm not saying he's Odell Beckham Jr., but he has not been the top level player in terms of the all pro level player that he was. He hasn't been that player for a couple of years. He hasn't played full seasons. I mean, last year obviously was a good year, but he hasn't played the, you know, 16, 17 game season in a few years. And I just don't think teams are going to value him the way that we might value a, you know, like a 27-year-old player who's going to have, you know, a couple of prime years left. Oh, by the way, Davante Adams is going to be in free agency next year. I think his cap number with the Raiders is $44 million in 2025. They're not paying that. So he'll be another guy that's in the mix in his 30s.
Yeah. I kind of feel like the Titans, he made 13. He had a two-year, $26 million deal. What was the guarantee, Robbie?
I think it was like right at 11, yeah. Somewhere around there.
I mean, to me, it's like, gosh, give him 17 for one more year and extend him now. Yeah. And then, I hear what you're
they
saying.
They can do that. I would say he exceeded last year his contract, especially when compared, you know, against what the market is and what receivers are being paid. So if you want to reward him and also say, hey, let's make sure we get 2025 under the belt right now. I don't have any problem with that, especially if it's a sub $20 million number. No, not at all. I think, again, you're playing on a rookie contract with a quarterback. It gives you some flexibility. You have youth in the wide receiver room that benefits from his presence. And the staff, number one, they've seen enough film on him. They've seen him, you know, it's the staff that's seen him on the field live, in person. They've seen him in games. They've seen him now look in off season activities. You know what you've got there, I think, right now. And so, there should be a level of comfort at least taking him through the 2025 season. It's just beyond that where, if he wants some guaranteed money in 2025, if he wants to know, you know, where he's going to be. And I know he made the comment about playing with the Titans till the wheels fall off. Okay. You know, get that done. I just don't know that beyond, given his age, beyond 2025 is really a realistic, you know, it's not something that I think most NFL teams are trying to do right now with these players. Like I talked to somebody with the Browns about Cooper and they're like, look, like, we'd love to have him back, but it's got to be the right number. That's what all these teams are looking at with these receivers when they get to the stage of their career.
So a couple things going on in the NFL. First of all, the new kickoff rule. Yeah, there's some teams realizing some things about it. I also wanted to ask you, Charles, just about the proposed PA thing on the off season, which right now seem to be super popular from what I'm gathering.
Yeah. Well, the kickoff's interesting because, you know, Tariq Cohen gets signed by the Jets, and I think you can see, the whole Justin Fields, could they put Justin Fields, out there for the Pittsburgh Steelers? You can see teams are starting to try and figure out what creative ways can we attack this. Are there players out there right now who could still fit in as returners with us? And, you know, these are players that I think teams are starting to say, hey, you know, guys are going to get 100. The guys we put back there, they're every single one of them, you know, is going to get probably 100 touches, you know, 100 plus touches. And we don't yet know what this play is going to look like. What I think is interesting through OTAs, if you're kind of paying attention to what kickers are saying, it's they're relearning what they're doing here because it's not a, you know, the kickoffs, it's always been sort of just the power, you know, power it, kick it hard, kick it through the end zone, like just kill the ball. Now it's not that at all. Now it's okay. Situationally, here's where you want to put it. You're going to have to finesse it. This is all going to be about touch. It's going to be about location. So you have a number of kickers. I would say all the kickers in the NFL have operated under one guideline previously when it's come to just the normalized kickoff. Now it's the opposite. It's, you know, how much of a finesse player, how much of a touch player can you be? And I don't know how many of them are going to admit it publicly, but when you talk to teams, they're like, yeah, you know, our guys are kind of struggling with it. They're trying to figure it out right now. I think it's just going to be wild when we see this thing now that it's starting to sink in, and there might be players who have been A-level kickoff player. Like, you know, you're like, this is the percentage he drives it through the end zone. And this is, you know, why he gets paid part of what he gets paid. That could completely change. You could have some great kickers who are not good at executing this kickoff from a touch and finesse standpoint. And I think teams are really nervous about this. The first month of the season, or maybe all of the season, but definitely the first month of the season, is going to be crazy. I think we're going to see some huge plays, and I think we're going to start to question, like, do we have to reevaluate, you know, some of the quote-unquote great kickers in the game, because they might not be able to execute the kickoff as well as maybe some teams would hope. And then the same with returners. You know, I'm very interested to see what value is discovered in certain players just because they're able to function really well in this kickoff without guys flying down the field 100 miles an hour. So that's probably one of the more interesting things I've seen come out of OTAs. And then what was the second thing you asked? The NFL offseason. Now, did we not talk about this on the show when we talked about Goodell saying, you know, 18 games and we'll give back a preseason, you know, we won't have a preseason game. Did we not talk about this on the show? I thought we did. Maybe not. I have a lot of conversations in my mind.
I don't think so.
So when Goodell comes out and he says, yeah, you know, talks about the 18 games, we'll have one less preseason game. It's such a ridiculous, disingenuous statement on his part. Like it's unbelievable that he talks about adding an 18th game, but he never says anything about money. Well, we'll have two buys. Awesome. We'll have one less preseason game. Awesome. But what, you know, you're going to gain $1 billion in revenue with an extra game. You don't think you're going to have to give up money in this situation? You don't think there's going to be a hard negotiation on the other end of this? There is. And so, you know, I know Tom Pelissero comes out and he talks about this idea of potentially eliminating OTAs. And he says, well, you know, the NFLPA, they don't want this tied to the 18th game necessarily. I'm going to disagree with Tom there. Like, maybe that's what they're saying. I don't agree. I think that's wrong. I think that it's part of what the NFLPA is doing right now to negotiate the package that they would want and that they would want to deliver to their players that would be in exchange for the 18th game. And what that package would be a larger bump of the revenue. I think they're at 48.5% of the overall revenue right now. I think they really want to get to that 50% mark the way it used to be back in 2006 when the owners opted out of the deal because they didn't want to be 50-50 partners with NFL players. I think to get there, you probably have to ask for 52% of the revenue and hope that you can get it to 50%. Owners are not going to want to do that. And then I think they would want to broadly appeal to more players, top to the bottom of the salary scale. They're going to say, let's appeal to lifestyle. You guys will have 5 months off basically in the off season. Now you do classroom work. You might do a mini camp, but you're not going to do all these OTAs, the couple of months that are eaten up by OTAs. You're going to have off. You're going to have a real vacation. And then you'll come in the first week of July, and there's going to be 2 months that teams will have to ramp up into the first week of the football season. And while I know I saw what Shelby Harris said, where he's like, players aren't on board with this. Look, man. I don't know if that dude's talking. I don't know who he's talking to. I have no idea what the broad appeal might be amongst players. I can tell you teams hate it. Coaching staffs hate the idea of it. Front offices hate the idea of it. But the NFLPA is going to try and figure out the two things that can appeal to the membership. That's going to be more money and more time off in the offseason. That's why that got rolled out there. And so when you hear it, just know it's one of the first things kind of being rolled out there that they'll try to push at the negotiating table for that 18th game.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Charles, how do you see the Russell Wilson, Justin Fields situation playing itself out in Pittsburgh in terms of who's going to end up starting for that team by the end of the year?
When you talk to people there, and I'm a little surprised with this, like, they're definitely committed to Russell Wilson. They really want Russell Wilson to be that guy. I went back. I was looking at an ancillary player on the Bears offense last year, and I was looking at some clips of it. I didn't mean to watch Justin Fields. I admit I was a little shocked at how difficult a lot of passing plays were for Justin Fields that I had forgotten about. Like, I just, you know, he's still definitely it's a labor as a downfield passer for him when it comes to accuracy, getting the ball out quickly. A lot of it felt, even completions, I was like, man, this is just a lot of work to get a pretty simple completion. And I wonder if maybe that's what the Pittsburgh Steelers are looking at, where they're like, yeah, he has a lot of, the raw skill set, things we liked going into that draft, but Russell's refined. He's simply a much better passer at this stage. He's not going to be able to do a lot of the off-script stuff that Fields will. But maybe that's not necessarily what we want play in and play out on this offense. The one thing I think they're underplaying, everybody's super happy right now, Pittsburgh. Oh, they're on the field together, and it's going great, and Fields is learning from Russ, and Russ is, handling this really well with both of these guys being in the room together. I don't think that's going to last. I'm just going to tell you right now, because you have two players who don't have any clue what their 2025 is going to look like. They don't have a contract, and both of them have to play their way into a contract extension for 2025 and beyond. And I think once the rubber meets the road in the regular season, and Fields has said, look, I'm here to compete. Like, he's not just saying, oh, I'll be the backup. That's fine. I do wonder if it's going to get a little tighter in that quarterback room. I do wonder if the competition is going to come through maybe in ways that the Steelers are expecting isn't going to happen right now. And what I mean by that is, you're going to have two guys that are sitting there going, I need to play. I need to go out there. I need to get snaps. I need to put down tape and earn where I'm going to be in 2025 and beyond. That can be a little dicey, in a quarterback room. So I'm curious to see, as we really get into the nitty gritty of training camp and we're figuring out who's going to be absolutely the starter there, and they want it to be Russ, I'm going to be interested in seeing really how Fields adjusts to that. And then what packages, I would expect they're still going to have some sub packages for him, whether it's red zone stuff or whatever, how open Fields will be to that being really the portion of the offense that he gets if he doesn't win the job in camp.
So Russ is going to invite everybody except for Justin to his birthday party. Is that what we can expect?
People, when we listen to this offseason stuff and everything's hunky dory, I don't disagree with it. Sure, it is, but when we get into camp, you do see a change. I remember going through Washington when, Kirk Cousins was still behind RG3. And I remember how, that room was just, God, this is horrible. And, Colt McCoy was in there at one point, and it felt like all these guys were ready to knife each other, at any given moment, because they were all like, I am a starter in this league. I need to get on the field and show that I'm a starter in this league. I think that still exists. And just because, some people are looking at Russ going, well, geez, how much more does he really have left? He thinks he has a lot left. And he thinks he's going to be a starter for the next 5 or 6 years in this league. And Fields is like, I got out of Chicago. This is where I wanted to be in Pittsburgh. Now you need to let me go out there and show you that I can be the player here. Those aren't great situations when the season starts. And even though from the surface, it looks okay, there's a lot that ends up going on behind closed doors and at home for players who are like, yeah, that dude's not getting this job. Like it's my job, and I'm going to do everything I can to keep him on the bench.
Yes, every quarterback room is just a place of total harmony,
yes,
as we know in football. Speaking of quarterback rooms, what's the Aaron Rodgers quarterback room like? He's talking about space lasers and stuff in there. What kind of dynamic is that? And what's that going to look like?
You tell me at this point. I feel like every week there's a new, Aaron Rodgers storyline, and there's always something new in the mix there. I don't know what else I can say about the Jets and Rodgers at this stage. It's just either they go out and he performs, or like you said, everybody's going to ultimately get fired. The Jets have not, and I don't know that you could have, I don't think that the Jets have, maybe you just can't, I'm in my mind, I'm like, how could they have handled this differently? How could they have talked to Aaron about, let's just pull it back a little bit, really stick to, football and you know, maybe don't say every first thought that comes to your mind. And I guess maybe you can't ever say that to Aaron. They knew what they were signing up for, and this is what it's going to – I mean, you guys don't –
Yeah, who's going to say it to him? Like, who's going to say it, you know?
Excuse me. I don't know. I don't think – it's not – I guess that was just part of the trade-off that I did not anticipate when he departed the Packers. I didn't anticipate that – it would be as crazy as it has been with him. And part of me wonders, had he not been injured last year, if he had more of an opportunity just to be about football, if maybe that everything goes differently, including this off season. I think maybe the idle time was maybe the worst thing for him ultimately. And then constantly talking about himself and the Achilles and you know, the Pat McAfee show, it felt, I mean, as bad as it was at times with the Packers, I think it got worse, you know, last year for him. I guess this was just ultimately what they signed up for. I hate to say this, but I'm so tired of, you know, every week it's like there's a new, he says something new or he does something new or there's a question and it strains, I think, what they thought they were getting into even at this point. But there's nothing they can do or say about it because they all know that their job is completely on the line. And if Aaron does not play well in 2024, nobody, including the general manager, including the head coach, including that entire coaching staff, is going to be there beyond, 2024. And by the way, probably not the only bad mistake they made, because if Nathaniel Hackett, you're dealing with an OC that you're not sure can fully function the way you need him to function, which is certainly the indication I feel like we've gotten, that's another huge mistake that you've made, where basically you wanted the quarterback to run the offense, and when the quarterback went down, you kind of needed him to be the OC, which he sort of was. But, you know, how bad was the pairing of him with Hackett at this point? I mean, I hate to say that because maybe they'll be great in 2024, but man, it's been a lot of not performance related stuff that we've talked about with him. And I'd love to hear from you guys where you think this is going, because sometimes I think I'm just at times too close to it, talk to too many people close to it, so I get worn out on it. And maybe this is all going to be great because, by the way, their roster, yeah, really nice.
Super Bowl or four wins. That's my range. Super Bowl or four wins. I mean, I could buy either and anything in between.
Like, realistically, you could really kind of see either of those things happening. Like, it's hard to believe. You think if he plays 17 games, there's no way they get four wins, right? Like, come on.
It would be hard to imagine.
Yeah, I would agree. And we would have to think that the offensive line just completely fell apart.
Just cratered,
right? That they rebuilt. Yeah, just cratered. So to me, if he's on the field and he plays, I would lean into them being the more competitive version of themselves. But, you know, I don't know. I presumed even when he went down, I'm like, oh, they still have a, you know, top level defense that fell apart. You know, they still have, you know, they have depth on offense, the skill positions that fell apart. A lot of it probably had to do with Zach Wilson. But by the way, real quick before I get out of here, I laughed yesterday because, I enjoy when I'm scrolling through social media and I see the, hey, Zach Wilson's arm talent is really popping next to these other guys in Denver. I'm
like, oh, baby.
I'm like, here we go. Like, we're back to the, like, this will be this dude's storyline for like 10 years of his career, and he's never going to meet those expectations. And I say that as someone who told you last year I thought Baker's career was done, like in Tampa. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, that'll be it. And I was wrong about that. But Someone said something on social media, like, when are reporters going to find something new to talk about with Zach Wilson that's not related to his arm strength? I was like, that's a good question.
arm talent and Cougars.
God, two man, topics. Like, it was America. We love those two things.
Oh, man. Charles, last thing for you here. You brought up the Devontae Adams situation and the money that he's owed next year. I'm just curious for your thoughts on that team as a whole. We were going through like quarterback situations in the AFC the other day, yeah, and you've got, yeah, Minshew and AOC, Antonio Pierce, who I think did a really good job last year. Obviously, the players love him. But I look at that team and the situation they're in right now at quarterback, and I just – I can't see a path. How do you view what we're going to see from the Raiders this year and what that's going to mean both for Antonio Pierce and for Davante Adams as they move forward?
Yeah. I mean, well, I'll say this for Pierce. One of the things, adding Marvin Lewis to his staff was, you know, I think it was a really smart, underrated move that happened. You know, Marvin, his associate head coach, he brings a lot to an organization. Like, he's very much a calming guy with a lot of players, especially when he doesn't have to be in the kind of the, I don't want to say bad guy head coach role, but I mean, he can be a more of a presence of wisdom, you know, as an associate head coach than what you have to do in the head coach position. So he's a great addition for Antonio Pierce. And to me, that was one of those moves where I'm like, okay, this is smart. Like this to me makes me feel better about, you know, where maybe this is going in terms of Pierce taking these steps now that he's got the job full time. But yeah, offensively, it clearly to me, they wanted to resolve quarterback in the draft. I absolutely believe they wanted to draft Michael Penix. That was way too far out there for way too long. And it was also, I think, part of the reason why Atlanta, you know, kept their love of Penix as close to the vest as they possibly could. You know, because I think they thought this is a guy that's going to go off the board at very least to the Raiders, and we're not going to have an opportunity to get him maybe later in the first round. So when that happens, yeah, it tells you it's probably one of the worst quarterback rooms in the NFL, I would say. You know, and that's I understand Minshew, what he did in Indianapolis was admirable. I think he's a really high-level backup, at best a very low-level starter in terms of what he can offer you in a full season. Maybe he's a player who can prove me wrong. We'll see. He's going to get his opportunity to do it this year. But I just think they're waiting. Like, it's undone. That, to me, depending on what the roster can look like in 2025, and again, I don't think Davante Adams is there on the cap number that he has next year. They've already started to reposition themselves. Part of drafting, I think Brock Bowers was, all right, let's at least, you know, start to get the foundation in place for who the next quarterback ultimately will be in 2025 and beyond. Could be a veteran player. Let's see who comes available, you know, next offseason, or we could have a situation where I know it's supposed to be a weak quarterback draft next year. All right, like, let's see, you know, because we don't know if another Jaden Daniels is going to come out of the woodwork. You know, maybe Riley Leonard is the guy who, you know, goes through the portal and comes out the other side looking like a star that we didn't realize he was. Maybe Carson Beck, you know, really, as well as he played last year for Georgia, maybe really, really puts it together this year, and we're like, okay, yeah, that's a top two or three pick in the draft, then, you know, things, I think, change a little bit for the calculus for the Raiders. But I'll ask you this, like, what if they're decent enough that they're kind of in that muddled middle, you know, where you're like, yeah, not really good enough to get to the playoffs, but not bad enough to have a high first round pick, you know, it becomes harder to address quarterback in that situation, which is why I think, you know, you saw some teams were probably aggressive about it in this draft, because they were just like, hey, if we're good enough, we're going to be in a, like, that's a, Atlanta even said it. They're like, hey, if we're good under Cousins, we're not going to have a replacement for him, because we're going to be at the back end of the draft. And if we want to move off him in 2 years, we need a guy. And this is the guy. That's why they drafted Penix. So
it's going to be very interesting. No doubt about that. Charles, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to be with us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely, guys. Take care.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.